Hello, Danny Cote at Locarno Film Festival. We're here to talk about your new film, about which you just gave me this amazing button called Nobody's Violence. The violence it deals with, it's very muted. Great to have you here. How do you feel?
A lot better, because I'm 3 years later than my transplant. And it's important to say that this film was written in the last year of my disease. That's where I was feeling the worst. So I created this sort of semi-autobiographical script using a character. It reminds me a bit of my condition when I made the film, and it's fun now to have made the film in good health and everything.
We're definitely glad to have you back and have more of your interesting works. So you were close to death. You made a film that's also very concerned with death, but also this aspect of assisted suicide that's especially in Switzerland, but also in more and more countries becoming a legislation. It gets more accessible for people. Did you plan for a long time to make a film that deals with that aspect, or was it more the idea of being close to the end of life?
It's more being close to it. I didn't want to make anything like a social film. I didn't want to have any special message on the question. If you see the film, you can see that I'm not pro, I'm not against. Quebec now is considered, it's not the right word, but champions of the world in terms of assisted suicide. In Canada, we call it medical aid in dying. It's called MAID. So I never hear assisted suicide.
Which sounds actually better that way, you know, because suicide has this negative ring to it.
Because medical aid means that you have a team of doctors helping you die with dignity. So you die at home, you die with your friends and family. The project was really, really centered on the way I was feeling with my kidney disease. It's not a social film. And I wanted to make sure there was enough light in the film. The film was luminous enough, or else it would be just a depressing film. I'm a bit surprised now reading some reviews that this film would be so dark. I think it's full of light, humor, it's going all over the place, it's a cute chaos at some point, but people are really attached to that thematic of assisted suicide, so I understand. Some people come to me and they talk about their private lives, and oh, my mother this, and my dad this, thank you for your film. So it's becoming very personal, while I wanted to just make a film about a character called Mira, and she's looking to have a new life. That's it. Yeah, but it depends on the interviews and how people want to approach the subject matter.
You have an episodic structure where Mira meets different people, each of whom she assists. Did you see those characters in some way as facets of yourself or representing specific points in your life?
Well, more like diversity-wise. Like I said, we live in a place where it's very accessible, aid in dying. So I can easily imagine it's touching all kinds of people with different origins, and some people are totally for it, some people are against it, some people are very at ease and at peace with their decisions. I wanted to have a broad vision on the question, but still stay on Mira and her quest to find a new life for herself.
You mentioned that you wrote this film when you were still very ill, but you shot it, if I understand it right, when you were already getting better. So you basically got this new life, and did it change your outlook on the film? Or imagine you would have shot the film before you got the transplant, or without knowing if you would get one.
It's kind of true that I wrote it when I was very sick, so I didn't know what would happen, but I would have been too sick to shoot it. So I knew I was writing it, and it was obvious that I would shoot it in my new life, but I had no clue when the new life would be. You need to understand that you're going towards something called dialysis, something called transplant, but what does that mean? And then you get this new organ and you open your eyes and what? Everything is clear? That's who I was like 15 years ago. Colors? But you don't know when you're writing. When you're writing, everything is kind of gray. Everything is tired. You don't care about colors. You're not dying. You're just, whew. Yeah, I wrote it, but it was obvious that I would shoot it in my next life without knowing which kind of life. So it's very, very fun. Not fun. You're in a total mystery. You know you're a filmmaker. You know you're going to shoot that script, but in which condition, you know?
Did you then look on the script differently? Were there things where you said, I don't want to do it that way anymore because I now have a new script?
No, I look at the script as the memory of who I was at that period. So of course, the film looks very, very dark now when I look at it. I know I proposed something very dark. So, okay, well, I'm going to say in interview and to people when I do Q&As, it was written in that period. But I'm not sure today if I would write this script. I think I would not remember the state I was in because your life is just changing. It's as if you would ask me, oh, write a script trip when you had two arms and now you have one. Really remember, because now I'm living my daily life with one. I would never regret the film you just saw. I think it's a period of my life.
Was there a lot of improvisation with the actors to develop the characters, or was everything very strictly written down?
It was a 55-page script, which is pretty short, but you want to make sure that you have a situation and you hope that the actors will make it bigger. So there are parts in the film you think they are improvised, but it's completely written, and there are others that is completely improvised and you think it was. It's because some actors are better at improvising than others. You never know how it's going to turn now. The dinner scene, I told them to say these lines of dialogues, but everything else had to be improvised. You don't know what's going to happen, and it's so fun to have these moments of, you don't know what your film is going to look like. You don't know. It's because I come from Quebec is a place where everything is so well written all the time, and the rules are so strict, and you need to respect the budget. So we make very, very locked in film. And with this film, I could find spaces for exploration, and that's really great.
You also regularly work with your main actress, Larissa Carnivo. How was it to work with her again? Was it from the beginning clear that she would be the main actress?
Yes, because she needed to have her own film. I know I made Mademoiselle Clinopsia with her, but I wanted her to be in a very well-scripted film, if you want. And it's our sixth or seventh collaboration. I don't like to use the word muse, because I don't like that word. It's like a cliche. But we're like old friends, and we can just talk to each other by winking or whatever. There's no extra intellectualization of concepts or whatever. She knows when she's doing something I don't like. It's like an old couple. You know, when I was young, I was looking at films from Truffaut and Fassbinder. I'm like, I always see that these people had a family. Always the same actors, always the... And I was like, why? Why do you always call Jean-Pierre Léaud to be in your film? Why is it always the same actors with Fassbinder? And now I understand. You can trust your people. It's a family. And Larissa is part of that family for sure. And she's very good at with silences. Everything that goes in her eyes is so inhabited, I would say. While other actors, they can just, well, I don't have any lines, so they look a bit dead. You know? But with her, yeah, and she's very spiritual. She's very esoteric at the same time. And I'm very concrete. Well, it's a perfect collaboration.
You have this winter landscape with snow and ice everywhere. Is it just that it's Canada, it's a lot of cold, or was it intentionally?
Well, you have dates. You have shooting dates. You don't know when it's going to be. And we were very lucky. Unlucky. There was a snowstorm and it was minus 30. When you see winter, it's minus 25, 30. When it's snowing, we're like, yeah. So it's very hard to shoot. It's too cold and it's hard, but on screen, it's beautiful. So it was regular winter in January. But yeah, we were lucky. Visually, we were lucky.
What was the biggest challenge when you did that film?
At first, I thought it was a challenge of shooting on two seasons, because I never did that. And I was afraid of the moment we would wait to reshoot. And then it was amazing, because we shot only summer. I could edit summer, and then I knew exactly what I had to shoot in winter. So I was afraid, and then I was really relieved. So technically, it was not a problem. God, I wish I could tell you what was a problem. Relationship with the director of photography.
That's all I'm going to say to that, but without my lawyer.
That was the worst.
So was there a lot of content about how the film would look, or are you just those two people with very strong opinions?
No, it was... What you saw is 16mm, and everybody's using Kodak because that's what's left. I'm lucky enough to propose that we shoot on film, and the producers said, okay, we organize the budget so you can shoot on film. A Ghost Town Anthology was on film. That Kind of Summer was on film. And again, I said, look, if we shoot on 16, the grain, I'm going to make sure it looks not ugly, but very low resolution. And that will match the way I was, the state I was in when I was sick. Everything was, the colors were bad. So the film matches how I was feeling. And I really love that. But the other thing, one day the director of photography showed me on YouTube a video of an old film stock from Germany, East Germany, called Orwo, O-R-W-O. That was created in 1949, East Germany. And it kind of disappeared over time. And then we discovered discovered that the company still exists and they sell 100 feet of film to young people just to go have fun in the street. And he said, what if I would contact the company and ask them to buy so much film stock that we can make a feature film? And then Orwo told him, never happened that we produced as much film stock for a film. And we said, okay, let's try to order big amount of film stock and see what we can do. Then the film stock came and DP discovered that it was completely unpredictable. It's an unpredictable celluloid. Like he would shoot and he was completely afraid that there was not enough light and it's not like Kodak. So it was a savage choice, savage film stock. And sometimes he would call me like nearly crying, like, I'm not sure that what I shot yesterday with a team of 35 people, I'm not even sure it's going to come out okay. And I would tell him, well, that's what I want. I want it very experimental. Say, yeah, but there's experimental and there's underexposed. So we're so afraid. And in the end, it's okay. And I like the result, but I'm not sure we would use again that film stock. It's too unpredictable. So I think it's the first time in the history there's a feature film using that. That was the danger and the beauty of it.
It's hard not to see that in some way as a parallel to the whole situation, because I think that your health and your life trajectory was also unpredictable and didn't know, would I come out light or would it just be like, you know, darkness?
Yes, but
we just kind of grim.
The way we talk about it now, yes, it's fine, but when you shoot.
Sure.
It's technical dangers. So, but it worked. It worked. But he was so... And then we agreed that we would only use the Orwo on daylight exterior. Everything that is shot at night and interior is Kodak. And color correction, we tried to make everything match. We have a drone shot. Drone shot has to be video. So we had to make everything match. It was a fun experience. It's not a trauma.
In many descriptions of your film or even some reviews, I read that it's supposedly a futuristic story. And I always struggled a bit to see that futuristic element. Did you see it as something that plays maybe in the near future?
The look of the film makes it look 70s. Some people said it's dystopic. It's not futuristic. And what I like is there's a timeless quality to the proposition. And on top of it, I live in a country where everything is legal. And I made it look like it's the deep, dark web with this weird organization. So it doesn't exist. It's improbable. I like all these elements put together, but it's certainly not futuristic because the future is medical aid in dying in many, many, many Western countries. Is it in Germany?
In Germany, it is legal, but it's extremely hard to assess. So
you see, it's going to come. But me, it's like regressed. Like it's still illegal, but made in a country where it's legal. But I love that this film is, how do you say in English? It's not possible. A lot of situations are just, what? That's impossible. That doesn't work. And there's a moment where she meets that guy in winter, Pierrick. It's winter. And then it's summer and she goes to Ludo's place in the house. And he says, I looked at your GPS and it seemed that you stayed for a long time in that region. Right? That was 8 months ago. It doesn't work. There are a lot of things I don't care anymore. I want to be so free and try to find poetic zone. When I used to write scripts, everything needed a reason. And you would go to institutions and try to tell the institution, I want this, I want that. Yeah, why? Why? Now they don't ask me too much question. They respect my word. As long as I bring them to Berlinale or Locarno, they let me make my films. And there's a lot of things that I don't care anymore when I make films. And it's fun and it's open and I feel so free. And this film for me is the freest film I made.
Do you already have a new project you like to talk about?
But usually after a film like this, I make a film with a bunch of friends. It's 5,000 euros like Paul. So I think I'm going to go shoot 6 months in a mansion. And I think the mansion will be the main character. And I don't know what's going to happen in the mansion. And then we bought the rights to a Japanese book written in 2002. It's called Revolver. And I'm writing the script, the adaptation of the book.
That sounds very exciting.
This is the story of a guy in the first page. He's finding a gun. And the whole book is trying to imagine how he will use the gun. Minimal. And I'm writing the script. Maybe in 4 years, you can remember it's going to be called Revolver.
And maybe we meet again then for another interview.
Yes, and then I will remember the time or the film. Because in Berlinale, sometimes you're 5 or 6 and it's like junk.
Thank you so much for this interview.
Cute.